Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for October 21st, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the WTA Championships Finals from Singapore. First and foremost, before we begin, how are you today, Parsa?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Getting ready for the final event of the year for the women. And then we have, obviously, the race to London for the men. Still very active. We have four qualified players with Nadal, Federer, Zverev, and Dominic Thiem. Still four places up for grabs. And then the women, as we'll get into today, we have the Elite Eight for them. And then we'll get a little bit into the wrapping up Shanghai from last week. Looking forward to Basel and Vienna for this week. So let's start off with last week, Parsa. So we had Federer, you know, notching the title once again in Shanghai, fast-paced hard court over his arch rival and good friend Rafa Nadal in straights. As pretty much, you know, we predicted as we were going in, you know, if for those who listen to our wrap-up podcast on the U.S. Open, I had said that, you know, Federer mentioned after he lost to Delpo in the quarters that he's going to get down to, you know, Asia early, get really, you know, acclimatized and get ready to go there. And he said, I'm going to get ready to win that tournament. And that's exactly what he did. And that's why I had picked him, you know, from the U.S. Open to win that tournament. And he did that. So he made me look good once again. And so did you have any thoughts overall on that event? I thought it was pretty true to form. I mean, on a fast hard court, and I believe the finals was played indoors, you got to always go with RF over Rafa, right? I mean, that's going to be 9 out of 10 times for me, you know, Federer is going to win that match. You know, well, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, first of all, the most interesting thing I read was actually the brain game. Craig O'Shaughnessy on the ATPWorldTour.com had an article about why Federer has now won 5 times in a row against Rafa and what he's changed and how Rafa is trying to contradict what he's doing. First of all, one of the things that's happened is they've only played on a court surface suiting Federer, or at least from a neutral to a favorable court speed for Federer. So that's one, meaning they're not playing on clay. The second thing, what he noted was that serves evenly to each side. So he serves 10 times out wide, 10 times to the tee, 10 times out wide on the ad side, 10 times to the tee.
Okay.
And therefore, Nadal never knows what's coming. And he has learned to be able to be dominant in that matchup by keeping him guessing and not letting him get set in the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you remember, if everyone remembers from the past, it was always Rafa's forehand to Federer's backhand. And he sort of became predictable, especially on the big points. Rafa knew exactly what he was going to do, and therefore Rafa was able to pick him apart. Now, with the reinvention of the Federer game of being more aggressive, he's taking that out of the hands, or the predictability out of the hands of Nadal, and there are no more tendencies. Everything is just go, 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 go. And when the court surface is suitable, it's a winning game plan or game strategy against Nadal. And so I took away a lot in that, you know, we saw Nadal trying to adjust like he did against Kevin Anderson in the final, in that he went really far behind the baseline, but it had literally no effect on the service games of Federer. He didn't even face a break point in that final.
Exactly.
And what was that?
No, I said exactly.
And for on Nadal's service games, it's just sort of inevitable that Federer is going to get opportunities because he's Federer. He's going to create chances. He always has, even in losses, he's always created chances for himself. But always, again, was very predictable on those big points. Him, you know, 10 years ago, him and Uncle Tony were sitting in some hotel room and going, okay, on break points, you know, second serve, Federer's going to chip this ball. This is how you should react when he does this. And now you can't have this conversation with Rafa because it's just, it's always changing. It's never set. And so it becomes very dangerous. So that's what I've taken away.
Yeah, and it has to be said, right? Like, this is a momentum game, right? Especially with these top guys. They gain confidence from wins, especially beating their top rivals, and then they move forward. And when you have a situation like Federer coming through at the Australian Open, that was pivotal for the rest of the season, right? For him to get into a situation where, like, okay, I've won a Grand Slam after being off for 6 months, which is unheard of, right? He comes in, and then he takes that momentum. He wins Indian Wells. He wins Miami, once again defeating Rafa in both of those. And then he's like, okay, guys, you go grind away on the clay. I'm going to go chill out for a few months, come back on the grass, and lo and behold, he won Wimbledon. If he had, however, in my opinion, let's say he played a full clay court schedule, right? He went to Monte Carlo, he did the Rome and the Madrids, and he faced Nadal. Nadal is probably going to win all of those matches if they face two or three times. What that does, then that halts his momentum, right? Then the last meeting, Nadal won, right? Now it's, you know, it's just a consecutive order of, you know, from Basel to the Australian Open to Indian Wells to Miami and now to Shanghai, all in the favor of Federer, right? So he's keeping the mojo going on his best surface, which is hard court and grass, right? Like, hasn't played him at Wimbledon, but you get the idea. So I think that's a major thing. And I would be shocked if Federer plays, you know, on clay next year too. I wouldn't, certainly. Who cares? What do you have to prove there? You're not going to win the French Open again. Sorry for all you Federer fans out there. I don't care if no team will take him out there. There's so many other guys that can beat him there, excluding Nadal, in my opinion, right? So I think that he's playing it smart, and he's going to continue to play on what favors him, especially at 36 and some change. And Nadal's going to have his work cut out for him if he's going to face Federer. And I have a feeling they're going to face at least one more time before the end of the year, and that's probably going to be in London. And I'll tell you right now, I'm going to go with Federer to win that match too. So that's pretty much my, you know, conclusion on that, one of the greatest rivalries in our sport. And as we move forward, we have Nadal taking off this week because he needs to rest his knees. We have Federer back in action in Basel, obviously as the top seed. He's got a favorable draw. He's got TFO first up. Cilic is lurking. You got some guys, other decent guys in there, but Del Potro as well. But I think Federer, for me, is going to win this tournament too. And then we have Vienna. We got Thiem and some other guys like Zverev lurking over there, trying to, you know, get some momentum as they shift forward to London. But Parsa, as you look at it now, we have, as I mentioned, we have Federer, Nadal, Thiem, and Zverev as the top four. Who do you think is going to sneak in as the other four guys as we preview, you know, our setup for the World Tour Finals in London?
I mean, that's a great question in yes. That, you know, it's not very wide open though, Nima. Am I wrong with that?
No, I would say so. I mean, you know, Parsa, I'll give you some stats quickly here. We have Murray, who's not probably going to play, so you can X him. Cilic has got a ton of points. I would be surprised if he doesn't get in. So you're going to probably have Cilic qualify at the end of this week, maybe Paris. Dimitrov is in the finals tomorrow in Stockholm against Delpo. So look for him to make his maiden appearance there. Wawrinka, another guy you can scratch. Goffin has been playing well. Not a big fan of Karina Busta. I think he got really lucky this year, even though he's super solid. But for me, he's not a top eight candidate type of guy. You have Djokovic, who's obviously X'd for this year. You got Querrey's got a great chance. And then Anderson. And we have Burdick and Kyrgios, who have also X'd their seasons for numerous reasons, injuries and rest that they're looking for. So that's pretty much it. I mean, maybe Delpo, if he can get super hot, win tomorrow, win Basel, maybe have a deep run in Paris. Maybe he gets in as the eighth guy, but I would really doubt at this stage to see him do that. So if you're asking me right now, I'm going with Cilic, Dimitrov, Goffin, and maybe Kevin Anderson to round out the top eight. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it's between Querrey, Anderson, Busta, and I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yes.
You know, with the exception of somebody getting ridiculously hot and winning everything, that's how it's going to round up to be. It really depends on Querrey and Anderson, how they go the rest of the season. I mean, they're very, very close in points. You know, so it's it's all up in the air. We have to see. We have to wait and see.
How
did Query do in Shanghai?
Shanghai, I think he lost maybe third round. And same with Anderson, too. They both got knocked out early. And I think Anderson lost early this week, too. So it's interesting because they have very similar game styles. And you feel for both of them, right? They're like in their latter stages of their careers. And this is going to be their only shot ever to make this tournament. Let's be honest, with all due respect to both of them, right? So you know they both want to make it. And I don't know. I mean, you got Anderson, US Open finalist, Query, Wimbledon semifinalist. I'm kind of maybe leaning towards Query, to be honest with you. I think he's going to light it up in Paris. I have this sneaky feeling that he's going to do something there and just sneak in as maybe the eighth guy, which I would be happy for. I like Sam overall. I mean, he's not the most personality-driven guy. He's a very quiet, laid-back Cali feel, but I like his vibe overall, and I like his game. I mean, he's improved that backhand. That match he played against, you know, Misha Zverev, I believe we were watching it at your house that late night. I mean, he was just destroying him. And we were like, if he plays like this, he's going to... And then, you know, he played and he lost, I believe, in the next round. So it's just something to behold when he's on tilt. And I think that I would just love to see him. He's a little bit more of an exciting guy to watch for me than Kevin Anderson. Kevin Anderson is one of those blue-collared guys. He puts his head down, works his butt off every single day, which I super respect. But from an entertainment point of view, I would rather watch Sam Query play tennis. You know, that's my thought on it. As we move now, Parsa, let's change gears to the women's side. We have the final event of the season, the top eight players. I'm going to run them off for you quickly, Parsa. We have the red group this year and the white group. Red group is headed by Simona Halep, who's the number one player in the world. We have Svitolina as the fourth seed, Wozniacki as the sixth seed, and Caro Garcia, who had that hot run at the end of the year to get in as the eighth seed. And then in the white group, we have Muguruza, reigning Wimbledon champion, Pliskova, who held the number one ranking for a short period of time earlier this year, Venus Williams, former seven-time major winner, and we have Ostapenko, who is the reigning French Open champion. Interesting, Parsa, in this event, that you don't have necessarily the Grand Slam winners all playing. I believe on the men's side, as long as you're top 20, I think you get in if you've won a major. But we have Sloane Stephens, who won the US Open, who is not in. And we have, obviously, Serena, who, you know, is out with, you know, taking care of her first child at the moment, coming back for the Australian Open. So she's not in as well, too. So you have two of the major winners of this season not even in this tournament. So for me, that's a little bit of a blow to the event, but it is what it is. And that's pretty much it. I mean, I think we should start off with the red group here and see what we're taking here. We have Halep, as I mentioned, Svitolina, Wozniacki, Garcia. I'm going to go with right now, Parsa, I'm going to go with Halep and Svitolina to get through. I think Wozniacki once again will come up short with the power quotient. I think Garcia's playing hot, but I think she's had to put in a lot to get here, and I think she's going to be a little bit spent coming in. For that reason, I'm going with Halep and Svitolina. Halep finishing two in the group and Svitolina finishing one. So one for me will be Svitolina, two for me will be Halep. How about yourself?
You know, just to address the women Grand Slam champions, not all of them being there, I think it is a great shame because you get unproven champions in groups. And what I mean by that is I'm looking at Wozniacki and Garcia, and you know that they really are not contenders. Halep has been deep in many, many events, and very deservedly she is the top player in this section. And Svitolina has won major events this year. Yes. You know, Wozniacki, they've had good individual results, but the consistency hasn't been there. And so it's very hard for me to choose anyone other than Halep and Svitolina. Now, who's going to be one? Who's going to be the two? Just to contradict you, I'll go Halep one and Svitolina two out of the red group.
Okay. As we move to the white group now, we have Muguruza, Pliskova, Venus Williams, and Yelena Ostapenko. For me, it's going to be an interesting group here. A lot of firepower here. You're going to see, like you said, you made a good point. Like, the first group is kind of like the counterpunchers with the red group. And maybe apart from Svitolina, I think she can take the ball early and create some havoc for people, and Garcia as well when she's feeling it. But in this group, the white group, I mean, everybody here can smash the ball. I mean, Muguruza can kill everything. Pliskova's got a massive serve. Venus Williams has, you know, heavy artillery. And then Ostapenko, I mean, when she's ready to go, she's I mean, as we saw in Paris, she can kill every shot. So I think for me, Ostapenko is going to struggle because it's a hard court and she hasn't had the best form since that event. Venus Williams, I think, is going to thrive here. I mean, what an amazing story she's become this year. I mean, all props to her. Pliskova, for me, again, is my wild card here because she's been feeling good. Surface does suit her, but I do believe that she's very one-dimensional, and I think Muguruza is going to come in and shine. So for me, I'm going with Muguruza finishing one in this section with Venus Williams finishing number two. What do you have?
You know, I can't get by. You know, Pliskova, Muguruza are the players in this draw, but Williams is the champion. And she's the one that's got the it factor. And, you know, one of two things is going to happen with Williams. She's either going to bow out very early and sort of not put up a fuss, or she's going to go very, very far. And I think it's going to be a letter. I think it's going to be Muguruza. I think it's going to be Williams. I think it's going to be Williams as the one and Muguruza as the two.
Okay. So with that said, I have Halep as one. And then Venus as two. So it's going to be Halep and Venus. And then I have Svitolina taking on Muguruza.
That's Svitolina one, by the way.
Oh, I had Svitolina one. Sorry. So I have Svitolina one. So she's going to be taking on Venus. And then I have Halep as two taking on Muguruza, which will be a good one. I'm going to go with Halep to take out Muguruza. And then I'm going to have Svitolina taking out Venus Williams. And then I'm going to have Svitolina defeating Halep for this title. I'm taking that Svitolina train all year, Parsa. You know how I've been throughout 2017. So I'm going with
Svitolina. I think it's a great pick. I do think you're right. She can take the bar early. I think she's the most well-rounded player.
Yes.
So it's going to be very dependent on how the surface plays and how she plays in the pressure moments.
Yes.
For me, I've got Halep, who's going to be competing and playing against Muguruza first round or in the semifinal, and I think that's going to be just a terrific match. Lots of back and forth, lots of emotions, lots of tension, which generally brings about good entertainment, and I think that's what it's going to be, is great entertainment, actually. And I'm going to have Muguruza going through there. Okay. In the second semifinal, I have a Svitolina versus a Venus Williams. And I think this is a little bit tricky here. So as much as Svitolina can do pretty much the same things as Venus can, I believe Venus has a better first serve and a worse second serve. And so
yes.
So much of it is going to depend on what Venus can do. And for that reason, because she is the one who's going to dictate what goes on and how it goes on, I'm going to have Venus going through in that matchup. And that leaves us with Venus Williams versus Muguruza, probably for the second time in the tournament. And I think this time it's going to be upended, and I think it's going to be Garbine Muguruza who's going to hold the title here this year.
Yeah, and I mean, she's proven that she's won a few big titles, right? So I think she's ready to do that. It's just as an overall dominant entity, I think she's still not at that level. And, you know, we've seen, as we mentioned in our previous podcast, there's been so much up and down, you know, number one players in the world this year on the women's side with the absence of, you know, that clear, you know, driven favorite that Serena Williams. And that's why I'm really looking forward to the Australian Open to see how she comes back fierce and, you know, she takes
care. And it's important to note, right, in my group, that means that Venus actually beats Muguruza in the round robin but then loses to her in the final.
Yes. And that, I think, is a sound pick. I think that, you know, that to me, because Muguruza has shown at the highest level in the last little while that she's able to, you know, get over that hump. And I think that at that point, if, you know, they face off at the biggest match, then, you know, that will take care of itself. So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they do a great job there in Singapore, and I think that it's going to be an amazing event for everybody there, as well as for all of us watching. So looking forward to that, as well as to Basel and Vienna this week. I've always really enjoyed the Basel tournament, to be honest with you. I mean, I would have loved to have seen a little bit more star power there, maybe like a Nadal or a Murray or a Djokovic, but unfortunately we don't have that this year. And I think, Parsa, before we wrap it up this week, we got to talk about these injuries. I mean, have we ever had a year that Novak Djokovic, Andy Murray, you know, Milos, Nishikori, Kyrgios, Berdych, all of these guys have just, you know, Wawrinka. I mean, we're talking about guys who have been in major finals or have won majors, and or super talented guys like Kyrgios. Everybody has, you know, bagged this year early, and it's just become contagious, and it's just, I think, indicative of how grinding and how tough it is to play, you know, professional tennis, because not all of these guys are that old. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you know, guys in their 30s, we can understand, but guy like Nishikori, Milos, you know, Kyrgios, these guys are not old guys. They're early to mid-20s, right? And they can't even finish a full season. So, I like, what's going on out there? And do you recommend any changes out there? Or this is exactly how it has to be, and guys just even more have to take care of themselves? Because I'll challenge that question, if you do say that, by saying, okay, Kyrgios is a guy who has even admitted that he doesn't train hard. Okay, so he's a little bit of on his own tilt. But you're telling me that Milos and Nishikori don't train hard? Those guys work their butts off, and they're always injured. So, you know, you take it away from here. Let's see what you have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I would never take Nishikori as an example. I think you just scratched that one just because he's always hurt.
Yes.
So
okay.
That's a little bit different. And Milos,
he's kind of always hurt too.
Yeah, he's kind of always hurt as well. He's a big guy. He's moving around. So those two guys I would sort of scratch out. Now you look at Stan, you look at Djokovic, and Murray has been wearing down. You know, he is an aging athlete. There's no doubt about that. We haven't seen that with Djokovic, with Berdych as well. I mean, so here's my general take on it, though, Nima.
Yes.
You see it in the NBA where they're resting players and they're doing things like that. And naturally, what the NBA has done is starting to make changes so that they have their superstars playing as many games as possible, which makes complete sense.
Yes.
Tennis is going in the beginning stages of their metamorphosis, and the season has been complained about and it's been too long for way too long, way too many years. It's just too much. And now that the money is so great, these guys can afford to say, you know what, I'm bagging the rest of the year because I'm going to concentrate on Australia, on the French Open, on Wimbledon, on the US Open, because if I win one of these, I win the US Open check was $3.7 million. I mean, so why should they play a 250 or a 500 in Basel or a 250 in Basel to make a winner's paycheck of $86,000 or whatever it is, and then after tax, you know, you're talking about 40-something thousand when they can go lose in the round of 16 of Australia and make four or five times that. So it doesn't actually make sense to play those smaller events. And so what's finally eventually going to happen is probably going to take 25 years, but eventually the schedule will be condensed to an actual quote-unquote season, and we'll have what we've always really wanted to have, which is an off-season where the fans around the world, this sport can finally get into the real mainstream where people crave watching it because they can follow it. But, you know, it's a little bit frustrating as a fan. You know, I'm passionate. I live and breathe tennis. So, yes, I follow the results all around the world. But you have to be like that in order to follow the tennis tours. You know, you can't be a casual fan, you know, and look at results and sort of follow along and tune in because it's going on all the time. And so it's always in your face and it's never new. It's always the same. And, you know, I think it's very important that tennis moves towards that goal of shortening the season, maybe to a 9-month season, you know, maybe this Masters being played this week, you know, right now, so that everyone by mid-October is finished and they got, you know, half of October, November, December, and then, you know, a couple weeks in January, and they're ready to go for the Australian Open in, let's say, January, February, whatever it is. That makes the most sense to do that. Now, how you do that, I don't know, but what's naturally going to happen is these tournaments that are coming in the fall, they'll go bankrupt. I mean, that's as simple as that. If they don't have the star power and they don't draw the people, then it can't work anymore. So I think that's where we're headed, Nima. To tell you the truth, I think it's watering down this fall season. I don't appreciate it. I don't like it. I love Federer and Nadal. I tuned in to watch it, even at 5 in the morning. But anybody else other than those two, like if you told me that it was next season it's going to be Burdich versus, you know, even Del Potro, I'm not waking up at 5 in the morning to watch that in the Shanghai final.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's a special year in that the last two remaining guys are Federer and Nadal, the greatest players of all time, the most beloved players of all time, with the most intriguing and incredible rivalry in the history of sport. That's who's left. So yes, the tennis is surviving because of those two guys. But take those two guys out and plug in Burdich and Kevin Anderson, and I'm not even paying attention. I won't even know what's going on.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Nima?
I completely agree, and I think 100%, if I'm the Paris Masters owner or director, as Guy Forget, still I'm not sure who it is, but what are you doing holding that event that last week of the year? Everybody who's going to have to qualify pretty much has already qualified. Like, nobody's going to play this year. We've talked about everybody who's out. I'll tell you, Federer's probably not going to play the tournament because he's playing this week in Basel, especially if he wins. Yeah, if he loses first round, he'll play. But I don't think he's going to lose first round. So if he wins his tournament, you think Federer's going to want to play 3 weeks in a row at this point? 100% he's not going to want to do that because he's going to want to win London for sure, right? So Federer's out. Nadal is saying he's going to play. But if Nadal doesn't play, who's the number two seed? Cilic? Like, and then Zverev? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you're looking at the situation like, hold this tournament at another point in the year, man. Like, hold it in February. Start the year off there and then just... Because February is a very dead month, if you think about it, right? There's just a bunch of 250s and a couple 500s, I think. Rotterdam, maybe, and Dubai are the biggest events. But if you put a Masters event in the middle there, like right after Metz, so you kind of have that prelude into, you know, or Marseille, one of those events, a prelude into the Paris Masters, I think that would really work. And that would ignite them because it's not going to take anything away from Indian Wells or Miami because it's kind of, that's the beginning of spring and you have these very tropical, you know, sexy places, right? Paris in February is not a sexy place, but the tournament, because you're going to get some better players, especially, you know, they're trying to keep that mojo going. If they did well at the Australian Open, you're going to see something happen there. But to have it next week with nobody there, everybody's pulling out, it's got to be just an absolute disaster for them. You know, and I think that that's something that they definitely need to look at because it's just, you talk about watered down, that's a Masters 1000, and you're going to have maybe nobody at the tournament. Like,
yeah, and it's actually a great tournament. You get great matches there because the crowd, the intimacy, it's actually a great place to watch tennis.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's now 2 years in a row. We'll see what happens in the third year, you know. But changes will happen naturally.
For sure. Sometimes because they have to, not because right. they want to. Okay, perfect. So thanks for listening once again, guys. Parsa and I will be back next week to wrap up the WTA Finals as well as preview the Paris Masters from France. In the meantime, you can hit us up on all of our social media platforms. You can follow Parsa at Parsa Sammy. Make sure for anybody also that's looking to get down to the World Tour Finals in London to hit up top-notch tennis tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. And then subsequently, the Australian Open, you're going to want to hit up Grand Slam tennis tours for all those packages. Parsa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, once again, for listening. Make sure to download us on iTunes and keep up to date with all of our latest episodes. Be good, and we will chat with you in 1 week's time.